Welcome to The Debate. You know, when you sit down at a high-end restaurant and you open the menu, your eyes almost involuntarily drift over to the right side of the page.
Always.
To the prices.
Exactly.
The prices. If you see a steak listed for like $200, your brain instantly performs this little calculation. You haven't tasted it. You haven't seen the cut. You haven't seen the chef's presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But that single number instantly frames everything that follows.
It sets an expectation.
Right. It creates a baseline. It demands an explanation. And in the stock market, that price tag is the price to earnings, or P/E ratio. It is the very first number the Neo platform shows you when you pull up a stock. But today we have to ask, does throwing that number at an investor right out of the gate give them, you know, essential clarity, or does it instantly anchor them with a bias that could blind them to a company's actual potential?
I mean, I love the restaurant analogy, but think about what that price tag actually does in the real world. It establishes an immediate psychological anchor, sure, even if it tells you absolutely nothing about the actual quality of the meal you are about to receive.
Well, it tells you what it costs.
But you might be paying for the ambiance, right? Or the chef's ego, or the prime real estate of the building itself. And that is exactly my concern with the P/E ratio. I contend that elevating it to the primary screening tool, the foundational first pass in NEO, is just a massive conceptual trap.
A conceptual trap? I mean, I wouldn't go nearly that far. I firmly believe it is the indispensable, ideal starting point. Valuation has to begin somewhere, right? And it must begin with a clear, anchored price tag.
But is it clear?
It is. By dividing the current market share price by the company's trailing 12 months of earnings per share, the P/E ratio does something really remarkable. It takes millions of data points, complex market sentiment, macroeconomic fears, sector trends, and it distills all of that into a single undeniable reality.
Undeniable is a strong word.
But it's true. It tells you exactly how many dollars an investor is being asked to pay today for $1 of historical earnings. It's empirical.
Yeah, but I come at it completely differently. I think putting that raw number front and center is incredibly dangerous because, well, the metric is inherently empty without immediate, highly complex context.
Empty?
Yes. If you present it first, you risk premature dismissal of incredibly strong companies or, on the flip side, unwarranted enthusiasm for failing ones.
Okay, let's break down that risk because I think the danger is way overstated if you actually understand what a first pass is meant to accomplish. Look, information overload is an investor's greatest enemy, right?
Oh, absolutely.
We are talking about thousands of equities, endless balance sheets, cash flow statements, and, you know, macroeconomic indicators. Neo uses the P/E ratio to efficiently slice through all that noise and ask a really simple triage question. Is this stock much more expensive than its sector or far cheaper than its peers?
Efficient, yes. I'll grant you it's efficient. But is it actually helpful if the initial answer it gives you is mechanically misleading?
But it isn't misleading. Looking at the P/E ratio first is like looking at the listing price of a house relative to its square footage in a specific neighborhood.
Okay.
You would never buy the house based purely on that price per square foot metric, but you absolutely need it to decide whether you should even bother walking inside to inspect the foundation. If the house is priced at a massive premium, you expect marble countertops. If it's suspiciously cheap, you expect a cracked foundation. The number sets the expectation.
Okay, let me stop you right there, because that analogy fundamentally breaks down when we apply it to equities.
How so?
Well, a house is a static asset. Its square footage does not shrink overnight. But a stock price relies on moving, highly volatile earnings. Let's walk through the exact mechanics of how a supposedly cheap P/E ratio can actively trick an investor. We call it a value trap.
Right. I know where you're going with this, but go ahead.
Imagine you're an investor logging into Neo for the first time. You run a screen and you see a stock with a P/E of 8. The sector average is, let's say, 15. The raw number is screaming massive value opportunity, right?
Sure. It looks cheap.
Let's say the share price is $40 and the earnings per share over the last year was $5. 40 divided by 5 is 8. You are paying $8 for every dollar of earnings. It looks like an absolute bargain. But what if that company's primary product just got completely leapfrogged by a competitor's new technology?
Well, then the market knows.
Exactly. The market knows their sales are drying up. So over the next two quarters, their earnings drop by 50%.
Right. So the E in the equation shrinks.
Yes. The earnings per share drops from $5 to $2.50. Now, even if the stock price stays perfectly flat at $40, your effective PE just rocketed to 16.
Yeah.
The price didn't change, but the foundation shrank beneath you. You didn't buy a cheap asset. You bought a declining one. The math literally trapped you. The cheap house was actually on fire. And if INEO uses PE as the very first gatekeeper, it draws investors right into that burning building.
I hear you. And yes, the mechanics of a value trap are very real. But I really think you are drawing the wrong conclusion from that map.
How? It's right there in the numbers.
Because you wouldn't even know to investigate whether the house was on fire unless you first noticed the listing price was suspiciously low. The fact that earnings can fluctuate is exactly why the PE ratio is so vital as a starting point. It forces you to confront the relationship between price and earnings before you get completely lost in the narrative of the company.
But the E isn't just fluctuating based on organic business performance. It is deeply susceptible to one-time accounting events. It's fundamentally a rearview mirror metric.
Sometimes, sure.
Let's say a company had a terrible operating year, but they sold off a massive piece of commercial real estate. That one-time asset sale floods their income statement with cash for that specific quarter. Suddenly, their trailing 12 months of earnings looks artificially huge.
Right, a spike in the E.
Yes. So the PE ratio drops to an incredibly enticing number, say a 5. But it's a total mirage. They can't sell that building again next year. The foundation of your first pass is built on shifting sand.
Okay, I'll concede that trailing earnings can be noisy. You can have one-time asset sales that inflate the E, or one-time write-downs that artificially deflate it. I grant you that. But think about how an investor actually uses the INEO platform. If they see a PE of 5 in an industry that usually trades at 20, that noise is exactly the prompt they need.
A prompt to do what? Run?
A prompt to dig deeper. It serves as an alarm bell. It forces the investor to ask why. It doesn't demand you know everything instantly. It points a laser directly at the anomaly you need to investigate.
But an alarm bell is only useful if you intuitively understand what it's signaling. If the alarm rings differently depending on what room of the house you are in, it's a confusing system. And this brings up the immense cognitive load the PE ratio places on the user the second they log in.
Wait, what do you mean by cognitive load? The beauty of PE is its simplicity. It's literally just price divided by earnings.
The calculation is simple. The interpretation is incredibly demanding. Look at the underlying research backing INEO's tools. It makes it explicitly clear that there is no universal good PE ratio.
Right. There isn't one.
Context is everything. You cannot compare cross-sector. Think about a mature, stable sector, like utilities, versus a high-growth sector, like cloud software.
Right, which is why you shouldn't compare them directly.
But an investor has to actively know that before the number makes any sense. Let's break down the mechanics. A utility company is heavily regulated, right? Their profit margins are basically capped by the government, and they require massive physical infrastructure.
Yeah.
Because their growth is highly predictable but fundamentally capped, the market isn't going to pay a massive premium. A PE of 10 or 12 is totally normal for them. Now, look at a cloud software company. They have near zero marginal costs. Once the software is built, selling the 10,000 copy costs almost nothing.
It's pure scale.
Exactly. They are scaling globally and reinvesting every dollar back into customer acquisition. Investors are pricing in massive future cash flows, so the stock trades at a PE of 50 or 60.
Which is entirely rational.
It is rational, but think about the burden it places on the user at step one. If you see a PE of 15, you have to instantly load historical and sector averages into your brain just to translate it.
I don't know if I'd call that a burden.
It is. You have to know that a utility stock trading at 15 times earnings today is actually terribly expensive, while a cloud software stock trading at 15 is the bargain of the century. If a metric requires you to instantly conjure historical averages and sector norms just to make the raw number functional, it simply shouldn't be the first thing you look at.
See, I have to push back hard there. You're arguing that because a metric requires context, it shouldn't be the starting line. I argue the exact opposite.
Really?
Yes. The demand for context is precisely why the PE ratio is the greatest starting tool we have. If you are looking at a regional bank trading at 15 times earnings, and you know the banking sector generally trades at 10 times, the PE ratio has successfully done its job. It formulates the correct question.
But what if they don't know the sector average?
That's why NEO provides it. And then you ask, why is the market willing to pay a 50% premium for this specific bank? Is their loan portfolio exceptionally clean? Are their net interest margins significantly wider than their competitors?
Or maybe their earnings just cratered last quarter, which artificially inflated the multiple, and the market hasn't fully priced in the damage yet.
Exactly. It could be a brilliant premium or trailing error, but you only begin investigating the loan portfolio or that recent quarterly filing because the PE ratio forced you to notice the discrepancy. That is the very definition of triage. It is the perfect anchor.
Okay. But there's a massive blind spot in that alarm bell system, and it leads us directly to the most critical flaw in using PE as a primary screen.
Which is?
The PE ratio is completely, fundamentally blind to growth.
Well, yeah, it doesn't measure growth. No, it measures the current price against historical earnings.
Right. And investing is not the study of the past. It is the allocation of capital toward the future. Let's go back to our cloud software company. If I see a PE of 60, the PE alarm bell is screaming, danger, extremely expensive. But what if that company is doubling its revenue every 6 months?
Then the 60 is justified.
What if they are capturing 80% of a newly emerging market? A PE of 60 might actually be incredibly cheap for a company growing that fast.
Which is why investors in those sectors pivot to growth-adjusted metrics.
Precisely. They pivot to the PEG ratio. The price-to-earnings ratio divided by the annualized growth rate.
Right.
The PEG ratio exists entirely because the base PE ratio is inadequate at pricing in the future. Let's look at the mechanics. If a company has a PE of 30 and they are growing earnings at 15% a year, you divide 30 by 15 and you get a PEG ratio of 2. It allows you to immediately see if the valuation roughly matches the growth trajectory.
And generally, a PEG of 1 implies the valuation and the growth are perfectly in sync.
Exactly. So if we know that high PEs can be perfectly reasonable when earnings are growing fast, and we know that we need the PEG ratio to validate whether that high valuation is justified, why are we making the user start with the incomplete metric?
Well,
why not just make a growth-adjusted metric, like the PEG, the primary initial screen in NEO? Let them see the full nuanced picture right away.
Because you can't calculate the speed of a car if you don't know where the starting line is.
That sounds poetic, but what does it actually mean mathematically?
It means that you cannot conceptually grasp the PEG ratio without first wrestling with the underlying PE ratio. The PE ratio is the foundational reality. Think about the components of the PEG ratio you just described. You are taking a known fact, the current stock price, and dividing it by what?
By the projected earnings growth rate.
Right. And where does that projected earnings growth rate come from?
Analyst estimates, consensus forward projections.
Exactly. It comes from Wall Street consensus. It is a hypothesis. It is a group of human beings making highly educated but ultimately fallible guesses about what the macroeconomic environment, consumer demand, and supply chain logistics will look like 12 to 24 months from now.
I mean, yes, they are projections.
And we know that analysts get those growth projections wildly wrong all the time.
They do miss, yes.
So if you start with the PEG ratio as your primary screen, you are immediately baking human bias and hypothetical projections into your very first pass. You are abstracting the valuation away from the immediate, tangible cost. The PE ratio, despite its flaws, is a documented fact.
It's a historical fact.
Yes, but it grounds the investor in empirical reality. It says, right now, today, you are paying $25 for every $1 this company actually produced in the real world over the last year. You absolutely must understand the premium you are being asked to pay today before you start hallucinating about how fast they might grow tomorrow.
Hallucinating is a bit strong. These are rigorous financial models.
But they are still projections. When you lock into the PE ratio first, it is a sober, grounding exercise. It forces the investor to internalize the actual cost of admission, before they buy into the optimistic narrative of future hypergrowth.
Look, I understand the desire for empirical grounding. Truly, I do. But I think you are anchoring the investors so heavily to a backwards-looking reality that you risk training them to be inherently overly cautious about high-growth innovators.
I don't think it trains them to be cautious, just aware.
But if your primary screen always flags high-growth companies as expensive because it doesn't factor in their future trajectory, you are going to systematically filter out the companies that drive the majority of market returns. And conversely, you'll be constantly tempted by those dying legacy businesses that look statistically cheap on a trailing basis.
I think that underestimates the intelligence of the investor using the platform. We aren't suggesting they stop at the PE ratio.
No, of course not.
We are saying it is the optimal place to start. Its sheer simplicity and direct connection to current price and realized earnings make it the ultimate triage tool. By using it to ask whether a stock is much more expensive than its sector or far cheaper than its peers, it establishes the baseline expectation. It is the bedrock for all subsequent analysis, including the PEG ratio.
And I maintain that while the PE ratio is undoubtedly a vital piece of the valuation puzzle, elevating it to the primary first pass places too much burden on the user, because a low number can mechanically signal high risk just as easily as it signals deep value. Leaning on it first demands that the investor read the metric and then immediately distrust the metric until they go hunt down historical averages, sector norms, and growth expectations. It feels less like a baseline and more like a hurdle.
But I think we can both agree that absolute numbers, whether it's a PE of 10 or a PE of 50, are entirely meaningless in a vacuum.
Oh, absolutely. We certainly converge there. You can never look at a PE ratio and definitively declare a stock cheap or expensive without referencing that broader ecosystem of data.
Right.
The historical context, the sector comparisons, the mechanics of one-time asset sales, and those critical growth estimates we discussed. The raw number itself is really just ink on a page without that surrounding ecosystem.
Exactly. It requires the ecosystem to fully bloom. Which leaves us with a fascinating tension for our listeners to consider the next time they log into the NEO platform. When you pull up a stock and that PE ratio stares back at you, does starting your analysis there provide you with brilliant, anchoring clarity that grounds you in reality?
Or does it instantly introduce a need for caveats and context that completely complicates your first look?
It really comes back to how you, as an investor, process financial information. Do you want the raw, empirical facts first, even if they lack nuance and require you to build the context manually?
Or do you want the nuanced, growth-adjusted picture immediately, even if it requires trusting Wall Street's projections over hard historical data?
It is the ultimate investor's dilemma. And it brings us right back to sitting at that table in the restaurant.
With the menu.
With the menu. When you open that menu and see the $200 price tag, does it tell you the steak is perfectly aged and masterfully cooked? Or does it just tell you that you're sitting in an expensive room? The number is real, the cost is real, but the value, well, the value is what you have to figure out next. There is so much more to explore in these mechanics, and we encourage you to dig into these metrics and test these tools yourself. Thank you for joining us on The Debate.